Hey everybody, Jason Burmis here, and we've got a really big show lined up for you right now with Tony Gosling. He's an ex-journalist at the BBC, but he's really done his best work outside of the mainstream. And one of the things that I think is important today, and you can follow Tony over at Tony Gosling on Twitter, or you can go check out his website right here, and that's also linked over in Twitter. And one of the things that, you know, a lot of people have gotten beyond is because these meetings like Bilderberg Group, Bohemian Grove, and others haven't been meeting, doesn't mean their agenda is not pushing forward. And for the first time since its inception in 1954, the Bilderberg Group did not meet. And for the first time since its inception in 1872, and really before that, before it was called the Bohemian Grove, they did not physically meet. However, there are so many people involved with this idea of a great reset, which is really repackaged globalist New World Order collectivism propaganda, this idea of the regimentation of all human beings under a track trace database technopoly, that Tony was kind enough to contact me, say, you know, we need to talk about these Bilderberg guys. And here he is. So, Tony, first of all, tell people how they can find your stuff and a little bit of your background, and then just dive right into it.
Okay, well, my background really is in the aviation business here in Britain, looking at in a family business, which I grew up in. But I kind of realized that day after day, you know, when you're a teenager, you sort of find airplanes kind of fascinating and interesting. But, you know, after a while, I realized that was not for me. And I needed something which was going to challenge me every morning. You know, journalism was certainly it, because I could see it going downhill. This is really in the 1980s. And I wanted to get in, at least to get a bit of experience, and get to know a few other journalists and colleagues before the whole thing. It seemed as if at the time in the 80s it was going down. This is in the Thatcher era, when Victor Rothschild, who's been outed now as the fifth man, a massive Soviet spy right the way through World War II and all the way through the Cold War, where he actually told Marmaduke Hussey, who was the chairman of the BBC, just before I joined, I didn't know this at the time, but in 1987, Victor Rothschild asked Marmaduke Hussey, can you sack the Director General? Basically, he was working very closely with Thatcher, even though he was a Labour peer. Lord Rothschild, it was the one behind the manoeuvres to get rid of Alistair Milne, who was the Director General, who most of the people, obviously, I was working with in the late 1980s at the BBC had been trained under that sort of era, you know, the Milne era. The other interesting little fact to do with that whole episode was the Hussey, who ran the BBC in the 80s, his wife was the chief lady-in-waiting to the Queen, which made it very awkward when they were trying to film a panorama about Diana secretly. They couldn't ask Marmaduke Hussey, you know, is this okay? Because they knew that it would get straight back to the royal family and that they would never be allowed to be shown. So for anybody in the States that hasn't seen it, I imagine many people have, the panorama documentary with Princess Diana was an absolutely amazing. I mean, they had to basically pull it off the journalists at the Beeb under the noses of, you know, people walking past their bosses. And they would have been very, very upset if they'd known they had even filmed Diana, let alone they were about to broadcast it without telling anybody in the top of the corporation. So I mean, my time there was really, I think, in it, picking up a lot of the knowledge, journalistic knowledge, from people who'd worked for a long time in what was a much more balanced professional outfit. Now it's basically just a propaganda arm of the City of London and Big Pharma, Jason. So I've been doing stuff, you know, pretty much ever since, on and off, environmental campaigning around land rights, squatting, mass trespasses and things in the 1990s, which was great fun, taking over big bits of land and getting on in the news, really just making it clear that, you know, land is a free gift to mankind. And all this idea about, you know, using the property to make money rather than to actually live on it, work on it, grow food on it, all that sort of thing, is a big historical anomaly. So then I got on to as a freelance radio journalist, and I did 12 years in Bristol on FM, and it looks like I may be about to go back on FM again after I was hoofed off by my station manager, who's rather spineless, because he didn't want to have any complaints about COVID, even though he hadn't had any complaints about COVID about my show. And we had blown back in February. I thought was a pretty important story, a lid off of this whole idea of what is the origin of COVID-19, as it was called, SARS-CoV-2 at the time, which was looking into this genome published by the Chinese, which had been brainstormed at New Delhi University, where the virologists there, these Indian virologists, a whole load of them, came up with the startling conclusion that this could be a man-made virus that was going wild in Wuhan with SARS and also spike protein from the AIDS virus.
And let me just stop you there for a second because we always like to back things up, especially when we're talking about this on YouTube and authoritative sources. You know, one of the great ironies of this whole thing is that not only did you have that, but it got referenced by the Nobel Prize winning virologist from 2008 saying, look, I don't know that it's a bioweapon, but it may be a vaccine for HIV gone wrong. This was definitely done in a lab somewhere. And then now, you know, as I keep telling my audience, this vaccine that they're promoting, aside from all these other things, they've already said, this is Forbes magazine, this all the way back in October, that you could actually have an increased risk of HIV infection, which is very odd. In other words, you could develop an immune virus from taking this. And then you had the false positives when this first started rolling out. So to discount, for instance, the fact that this could have been a man-made virus. Again, you're not looking at the evidence that's out there in plain sight, and it's not the narrative that the mainstream media is going with. However, they are reporting it in bursts, and I think that's important.
Well, yeah. I mean, I don't know if you've interviewed or spoken to Greg Felton up in Vancouver. He's done a terrific book called SARS-CoV-2. I've got to get this right, Contagion, Collusion, Corruption, which came out about 3 weeks ago, which really nails this down as a man-made thing rather than any kind of natural mutation. He's done an extremely good and quick job on that. Just to be careful about the actual quotes used by the Indian virologists in New Delhi, they said it's unlikely to be natural. That was in the header and in the conclusions of their, I think it was only about 6-7 page PDF report, which they put out back in the beginning of February. Mm-hmm. So, you know, this we were reporting on this stuff back in February. By the end of February, I was over on holiday in New Zealand, but by March, I'd been hoofed off the airwaves, and I'd actually had a chat to you, I seem to remember, from a hotel in Rotorua with a terrible Wi-Fi connection, but we managed to get through a little bit anyway. And you know, I think our discussion at the time, as I remember it, I was just floating immediately the idea, look, we could be just heading on the way to mandatory vaccines with this. And that seemed to be because we've been reporting on these new legislation in China and in Germany and other countries, I think Italy too, at the end of 2019, which I'd been reporting on, which I thought was extremely dodgy. He hadn't got much reporting, which was introduction of laws mandating vaccinations in those countries. So that was all happening autumn, winter 2019. And when I saw this thing coming over the horizon as an international lockdown in March, then I was immediately thinking, gosh, you know, this looks like this is where they're going to take this. And so it was a great conversation, even though it was a little bit, you know, I'd just been having a chat to my friend in Tauranga the day before in New Zealand, who's written the book, and it's an absolutely amazing book. I'm not even sure, I can't remember the name he uses as the author, because he can't use his proper name. It's about the Christchurch mosque massacres over there. And he was showing why it is that the New Zealand government has made it a criminal offence to have possession of the Facebook video that the murderer, the massacre guy, I do know his name, but I'm not going to say it because this is one of the nice things that I think Jacinda said at the time, the Prime Minister of New Zealand. She said, I don't want to name this guy. I don't want him to become a household name. So I'm not going to do that. But I did see the video. And if you look at it very closely, you can take the little freeze frames from it, as various people, including Max Egan, have done. And you can see that there are these figures basically directing him. So he certainly wasn't acting alone in that.
Well, they arrested him. And, you know, I don't like to get into any kind of like, you know, because there's, you know, especially now with the Nashville bombing and all these different things. But one of the things that was very underreported is they actually did have a second site, and they did arrest two other people, and there were pictures of those people. And I did videos on those people and said, well, why are these people being detained and arrested in conjunction with this? Why is there a second site? Why is there a second shooting? Why is no one talking about this? And, you know, when you do have those massive events that all of a sudden there is that reaction, right? And then the solution provided to the problem that comes before you. And a lot of the...
Yeah, when I was actually over in New Zealand, there was it was the first anniversary of the Christchurch mosque massacre, and it was fascinating to hear the New Zealand press actually doing a really quite good job on taking down the mayor of Christchurch. She'd been involved in all sorts of corruption scandals where she'd been basically giving contracts to her friends, personal friends, and when they asked her about these things live, because she was at the event, which was some sort of anniversary, you know, as good journalists do. I mean, that's what good journalists do. They ask questions whenever they get the opportunity of the powerful. She was just dodging the questions. She actually almost spat at these journalists, saying, how dare you ask me this? Look, I'm a journalist. That's what I do, love. Sorry. But, you know, we're going off a subject a little bit. But New Zealand, of course, is a very important test case with COVID, because they brought about this whole thing over there where there's not going to be no apparently the virus is never ever going to enter New Zealand. Well, I don't believe that for one minute, but they are basically making sure that everything is based on the virus from now on ever. You know, you're not going to be able to go in and out of New Zealand without 2 weeks quarantine, blah blah. Well, you might say that they've had a great success, but I would say the best policy is the herd immunity policy, where you make sure that, you know, that the whole country's immune to the virus. Obviously, some people are going to die. Elderly ages, that always happens with any kind of pandemic, or which I'm not even sure this was a pandemic. But they've basically gone into hypochondriac paranoia mode in both Australia and New Zealand now, where they're trying to make sure that the virus is gone completely. Of course, it never can be gone completely. It's always going to be hanging around.
Well, that's all right. So there was a summit, a Stockholm COVID-19 post-COVID summit, where they had a lot of great people speaking. One of them was a Harvard medical professor. We played it here. And he talks about, once a virus is out, you never go to zero cases. That never, ever happens. So, you know, we have the WHO on their own website changing the definition of herd immunity through vaccination now. Now you can't have it without vaccines. And now the goalpost has once again been moved. Fauci has announced that we need 90% to either be infected or vaccinated, right? That's also out in the open. That's extremely troubling. And as I have talked about, and why I moved from New York to Iowa, I was living in New York the last time we talked. Not anymore, sir. It was because they were putting it on paper. The New York State Bar Association was saying that they were going to mandate vaccines, and that they were saying that the Constitution had failed, 14th Amendment had failed, and that they would go for a national vaccination. And now, on Christmas, they're preparing what's the rest of the populace for these mandatory vaccinations. And, you know, one thing that I've pointed out time and time again here, we may have to play the video, I'm not sure, Tony, but this double vaccine, which, by the way, they're warning you, this is the American Medical Association, this is Susan Freihofer, if I can find where my mouse is really quickly, there we are. That it won't be a walk in the park, this vaccine, and that they may not come back for the second one. You get the headaches, all the adverse reactions. You know, we've played the woman with Bell's palsy, all that stuff. Again, this is American Medical Association. This is Sandra Freihofer. She's a doctor. You may not come back for the second one. And Vin Gupta goes on TV, gets the vaccine, then admits it has a 0% efficacy rate for stopping the infection. All the efficacy that they keep talking about is to create these quote-unquote antibodies. And right now, you know, everybody asks, well, who's benefiting, Jason? I don't know. How about this list of 50 new billionaires that are in the health industry and the medical industry? And the irony is, and I don't want this to come across as anti-China, is that half of these billionaires are, you know, people that live in China, they're Chinese, and they have 1.2 billion people that are not on lockdown anymore, and they didn't need a vaccine, Tony, and no one's talking about that. So speak to that.
Yeah, there's another aspect to all of this, which is how wonderful this all is for organised crime. What they've done is created a massive black markets in all sorts of things which would normally be very easy to obtain. Suddenly it becomes a black market. This is an absolutely fantastic bonanza for organised crime. Now, it does make you wonder whether actually what you're dealing with here and what we're dealing with around the world is international organised crime that's actually trying to create the best but possible scenario for its growth around the world. You know, with all the extra unemployment, you've got lots of people who need some kind of a way to pay the mortgage or way to pay the rent or whatever. They need an income. Organised crime is the traditional place that people go to where there's literally no jobs. If they've been trying to get a job and trying to get a job, they go, okay, well, let's go and talk to the local hoods and I'm sure they'll sort us out something. So this is something which the mass media is not talking about at all. I mean, there's lots that they're not talking about. The other thing I'd just like to bring in is this business of Brexit, because this is all just about to happen, supposedly. And I might, you know, you might think I'm a bit eccentric, but I think this whole thing has got quite a lot to do with Brexit. Brexit is the biggest pain in the backside for these people we've ever seen, because, I mean, you know, who are we talking about, these people? I tend to think the secret rulers of the world, whoever you want to call them, and of course they don't rule the whole world, but they want to, is the Bilderbergers. And I've been following these guys really since about 1996, when I was first told about them. I thought, well, this is an interesting organisation, especially when I learned, which was quite early on, that the chairman, up until 1975, was a former SS officer, Prince Bernhard of the Netherlands, that married into the Dutch royal family, then became an intelligence officer for the Dutch forces in Britain during World War II. And the Americans, to give them their credit, never ever let Bernhard anywhere near their headquarters and any of their secrets. But the British, stupidly, the army anyway, allowed him to, even though he's a former SS officer, to go sit down with people like Churchill, Montgomery, for example, planning Operation Market Garden at the end of the war. Bernhard was there as a liaison officer. And Bernhard, it's now clear, sent a spy in 3 or 4 days before one of the biggest operations of the Second World War in Europe, after D-Day, by the Allies, Market Garden, and told the Germans we were all coming to make sure that they were well prepared. Now, that's Bernhard. He was the Bilderberg chairman up to 75. And that, by the way, is the 1 year, 1975, when the Bilderberg didn't meet, apart from allegedly anyway this year, because 75 was the year of the Lockheed scandal, anyone old enough to remember it, where Prince Bernhard was in a hotel in Holland and he left in the waste paper bin some notes and phone numbers about a deal he was doing to get the Dutch Air Force to buy the Lockheed Starfighter jets. And he'd left all these details, threw them in the bin and went. Anyway, some chambermaid picked this out of the bin afterwards. I know this was a posh guy. And she had a Dutch journalist friend, handed him to it. He checked out the phone numbers and everything. My God, this is the notes to the, you know, an illegal arms deal that Bernhard's doing here. And Bernhard had a massive, just that little piece of paper in a rubbish bin led to Bernhard's complete humiliation in Holland, and that he had to then he was relieved of many of his public offices, and he was also told that we're going to have to cancel the Bilderberg meeting because it happened just before that meeting. So this is only the second year that the Bilderbergers supposedly haven't met, but I do believe that they meet all the time as a steering group. We've several times over the years, just simply, particularly a friend of mine, Charlie, in Italy, picks up quite a lot of Italian gossip and sends it over to me. And they found a few years ago autumn Bilderberg steering committee meeting in an Italian hotel. So of course they do continue to meet. So who are these people? Well, I would suggest they are a kind of secret government, a parallel government. The most of the important, I mean, if you have a look, one of the most interesting things to give you an idea of exactly who they are and how they operate is to go back to 1981 and the P2 scandal in Italy, where the Americans had been giving a lot of money from the CIA in order to fix elections in Italy to make sure that the communists didn't come anywhere near government. They were really worried that Italy was going to turn communist. And, you know, the people don't get a decision in these things. Of course, a similar thing happened over in Chile, you know, and the left wing are going to come to power over there potentially in the 70s. But anyway, so P2 was running Italy. It was a collection of, it was propaganda due, a Masonic lodge run by Licio Gelli, a fascist. And the idea there was that you just got all the powerful, wealthy people in the country, particularly publishers, newspaper owners, media people were very much on side, and bankers, politicians. You had big industry, people like car manufacturing, the Agnellis, Fiats. A lot of the people were very much crossover with Bilderberg, and they were just running the show. So if they decided that a potential prime ministerial candidate wasn't one of their lot people, what they did is they actually kidnapped Aldo Moro. They organized for his kidnapping and killed him. So he wasn't going to be prime minister, was he? So this is the way Italy was being run, by a kind of secret committee, propaganda duo behind the scenes. And Freemasonry was most definitely involved in that. I mean, it was a Masonic lodge, although the Masons try and say, oh, no, no, nothing to do with us. You know, of course it was. It was the top level of Freemasonry in Italy, basically, running things. And so I think, you know, that's an important thing to understand about how these Bilderbergers operate, is they just want to, they're the people that are moving the chess pieces. And I've been fascinated to see how many of them have been involved in this whole COVID fiasco. Well, it's not a fiasco, is it? It's a power grab. It's an international power grab. And Kissinger being the main kind of, he's really the main guy. He's the guy that sits at the top of the table on a Saturday at the Bilderberg conferences, and everyone wants to know who's going to be sitting next to Henry. It's just like a kind of royal court, you know. And by the way, in 2016, the people working in the Taschenberg Palace Hotel in Dresden told us the person sitting next to Henry at the top of the table is Ursula von der Leyen. Ah, now, and what happened to her was she became president of the EU a couple of years later. So don't tell me that these events are not important enough to report on. And you're really doing well if you can even get any of the mainstream press to report on them. But these are the guys that are secretly running the world from behind the scenes. And it's fascinating, I think, to see that they have basically moved because of Brexit, because of their absolute hatred for the idea that their wonderful a monstrosity they call the European Union, where when we as Europeans get rid of a politician, we, you know, once the politician is gone from the vote, so you know, for example, some of the main leaders of the opposition parties in Britain have been voted out in general elections here. So, oh gosh, but they've gone. You know, no, the European Union resurrects these people and puts them in charge of the whole thing at the European Commission. It's a totally perverse system. It's totally upside down to what politics should be, where we have people we vote for and respect running things. These are the people we booted out being put in charge of the whole ship, Jason.
Yeah, well, let's talk about some of these steering committee members, one of which is, of course, Eric Schmidt, right? So Eric Schmidt, Jared Cohen, they write this book, The New Digital Age, Reshaping the Future of People, Nations, and Businesses. This one's from 2013. They lay a lot of the things going on right now out in those years, especially the suppression of information. WikiLeaks gets a special place in this book. We're seeing that actually play out as it goes. On one hand, you have a guy like Schmidt, you know, basically, you know, I would probably say the upper echelon middleman and frontman for Google. You know, this is a company, Alphabet, Google, YouTube, they're all the same thing. They're working with NASA. They're into artificial intelligence, quantum computing. And he plays the lefty verse. All right. He's the one supporting the Clinton money and, oh, Joe Biden's going to get it. He sits on the steering committee. And then you got Peter Thiel. The younger guy, he's not really writing books for everybody. He's more behind the scenes, but let's get some Palantir in there and some track trace database software. And I'm going to be the technology advisor to the president until we have a falling out. So I'm presented as this kind of right wing libertarian aspect. Would you agree with me that especially in a time like this, the squabbles between those two are very few and far between? When we are seeing a technology take over in the idea of contact tracing and vaccine certifications?
Well, look, it's theatrical. That's what it is. It's not real politics, you know. And I think anyone that's been involved in, you know, actual television production, radio production for the real world can spot these things a mile off. What you've got is you've got a kind of prearranged agenda by the producer. You've got a couple of people, maybe an interviewer that's been handed a script. We've just seen this thing today, this absolutely monstrous program on the BBC. I think it's probably going on to the World Service too here in the UK, called How to Vaccinate the World, half an hour with Bill Gates, you know, and the journalist doesn't ask any of the awkward questions at all, not one, Jason. And it is really just, and I put it out there, giving it the title Bill Gates's Christmas Message 2020, because really it's just what he wants to say. And even though he's in this very powerful position as the monopolist now, you know, it's worth looking at how these people operate, the Teals, the Schmidts, the Gateses. You know, we had the whole Rockefeller oil empire for many, many years, didn't we? With Standard Oil, then broken up at the end of the First World War. But all the shares were kept in separate companies, like ExxonMobil was one, there's Texaco is another. So it looks like you've got different, but all the shares are still owned by the Rockefellers, or most of them, the majority shareholding. So they're playing this game, right? So they've still got a monopoly, but they want to make it look as if there's a different kind of petrol that you getting, or gas on the high street, you know, as you're driving down. This era is pretty much over now, but what's taken over from that is the banking and technology. So Peter Thiel, really, you know, you get that absolutely in one person with him as a Bilderberg steering committee member. These are the people who have completely taken over much of their industry. They've become monopolistic players in the finance world, and now they're saying, well, actually, let's rule the world. Since we control finance to such an extent, where can we go from here? Well, let's just start let's talk policy. Let's say, what do we want as policies? And we can just roll these things out through all these various think tanks, advisors that there are around the world, and they keep a very, very close eye, Jason, on every individual who's in government in all of these European American countries and all around the world. And if somebody with their own mind and a thinking brain cell gets anywhere near these positions of power, they are spun out by one reason or another. I mean, what they'll do is they will bully target them. They'll find an excuse to sack them. They'll, you know, maybe send in a honey trap sting or whatever, and they'll just get them out of the way. And they've been doing this for decades now, and I think that they're getting to the point where they think they actually do really run and control all of the affairs in the Western world. I mentioned the Masons a little bit, but I mean, I think these secret societies do have a role behind the scenes. There's definitely this is the way to keep people's mouths shut and also threaten them, because when you join these secret societies, including the triads in China, you go through a ritual which makes it absolutely clear if you don't obey the rules, then we have the right to kill you. I mean, that's part of the ritual. This is the, you know, the knife against the dagger against the chest is a pretty pretty obvious way of telling you what's going to happen if you don't toe the line. And this, over the centuries, is, I think, has been used particularly by monarchs around the world in order to make sure that their top military people are absolutely 100% loyal with that oath taken and that threat. But, you know, where am I going with this, you might well say? Well, okay, so I think you've got United States, lots of Freemasonry involved in the top levels there. I'm not saying Britain isn't, because it is as well. But also you've got the similar parallel secret society structure over in China, right? And we're now being set up with this America-China potential war, but actually maybe the same people are running the secret societies over there, and the same people are running the secret societies over there.
Well, let me just say this before we go into any more like secret societies or any of that. When you look at what is going on in China, you've already installed much of a surveillance state. You already have the social credit score. That's all been beta tested. You're already using re-education camps. Slave labor is already accepted there. You've already risen their currency to buy up our debt and actual resources over here. You know, and the idea that they're now propping this up as the new Cold War, it's like, well, no, don't you understand? It was guys like Henry Kissinger and Richard Nixon and Zbigniew Brzezinski that all made that possible. George Bush, George H.W. Bush back in the day. You know, this is a building thing. So obviously, no matter what you know, groups within groups, because we could talk about, for instance, you know, you say Freemasonry, we could talk about the Bohemian Grove, we could talk about even Skull and Bones and them bringing up, but these circles within circles where people are not only pledging allegiance to, you know, the flag of their nation or their ideal set, but all of these other subgroups. And like you said, you took a look at the Bilderberg Group. That's an out-and-out international organization of high-level monopolists at this point, banking cartels, politicians, and their puppets. And I refer to them as the predator class. And so on the surface, yeah, they're showing us, uh-oh, it's America versus China. But there's no coin shortage in the United States, and they're sure acting like one is. And they're getting people ready for a UBI, and that's something they've wanted to do for a long time. And guys like Klaus Schwab and the Great Reset crew are saying that you'll own nothing in 2030 and you'll love it. You know, all at the same time, you know, promoting these like, oh, we're going to get printed organs and we're going to the moon and you're going to meet aliens and all this bullshit, Tony, you know, that will never happen to us, but the oppression will. So, you know, I'd kind of like to get your take on Schwab. Because, you know, he seems to be the cartoon level Bond type villain that anybody with like any kind of awakeness right now is like, how the fuck is this guy a real person?
Well, look, before we talk about Schwab, just one final thing about China and the West, really. And if your viewers have seen the film A Man Who Would Be King with Michael Caine, it's well worth another watch. They had it on the telly here, oh gosh, must be about a month ago now. But it's a terrific film. And in the middle of the film, Michael Caine is a Freemason. He's a British Army officer. And he comes across this kind of crazy state out in the middle of the Himalayas somewhere. And he does some sort of Masonic symbol. He's in trouble, right? And with this they put him in prison, but he does a Masonic sign to the guy who's from the leader of this Himalayan country, and the guy immediately looks, oh wow, you know, you've got the same sign as me, you know. And they do a couple of these little recognition symbols, and suddenly the guy is right, so you must not be an enemy, you're one of our friends, maybe you're our messiah, you know. So he goes from being a prisoner, Michael Caine, you know, obviously he's got a big smile on his face because he's, you know, he thought he was going to get the chop. But it shows you how these people, and this is not just any old fantasy, the film, the original book, The Man Would Be King, was written by Rudyard Kipling, who was a Freemason. He was actually a terrific poet as well, and a Freemason. He knew that there were various societies in different parts of the world, not all just Freemasonry, that used similar symbolism. Although I'm not sure he did know that there was witchcraft at the back of this. You know, that's actually where a lot of this symbolism comes from originally. You can work it right back to that. Right. Talking of witchcraft, Klaus Schwab, look, I know, you know, no idea whether the guy's a witch or not. He probably isn't, but he's certainly right in the middle of this. And it's the most audacious thing. I could never have dreamt this up, Jason, when we spoke back in March, that there would already be a solution to all the problems, the economic problems particularly, that they're creating at the moment. And they are being created. There is no need for a lot of the lockdowns that we're seeing. The punishment, as I call it, is actually supposed to be the cure, is worse than a disease. And it's a punishment, not a cure. It's worse than the actual illness itself. It's far worse. And there's a kind of collective economic Harry Kerry going on, suicidal stuff, so that there is going to be an economic crash created by this of some sort, an economic reset. And there they are, they've already created the answer to it. This is incredibly audacious. And what with this June, I think it was last year, it was a partnership agreement, wasn't it, between the World Economic Forum and the United Nations. The United Nations running out of cash. The World Health Organization, just one of those parts of it. There's obviously many other parts, but running out of money because many of the major governments having been sucked in by these bailouts haven't got the cash for the UN. So along comes Klaus Schwab, the knight in shining armor. Hey, guys, I can fix it all. You know what? They never mention the word that is actually going on here, at the United Nations. That's privatization. The whole thing is being sold to the World Economic Forum, and their policies are becoming global policies. And just as if to prove that, that's how the, I think anyway, this whole pandemic thing has run out. You've had the same PR strategy used in almost every country. The IMF have been along to almost every government and been basically saying, look, you know, we will help you out if you go along with this furlough scheme, or, you know, you're paying people for not working, you know, we can do that. And there's very few Western leaders. I think Lukashenko in Belarus is one of the only ones that said no to them. And no, we're not going to have a lockdown, and we're not taking a load of extra money from the IMF. So this is a global policy, a global health policy and a global economic policy. And you know what? As everything goes wrong next year, as it's bound to, these guys are going to come along. And next to Klaus Schwab is going to be, bless him, bless his cotton socks. He only lives about 5 or 6 miles away from where I am in Gloucestershire here today, at Tetbury, at Highgrove, the Highgrove Manor, is Prince Charles. He's another one who's a great big fan of all of this. And, you know, so that's the thing I find quite amazing, is that you've got Prince Charles, Klaus Schwab, and they are saying, well, for many, many years, of course, Charles has had all sorts of ideas above his station as some sort of great global figure. Now it looks as if he's going to get his big chance along with Klaus. So they have a system sorted out already, Jason. And this is quite obvious what they're doing here, is they've created this massive problem in order to give them control of the global economy.
Absolutely. And we've covered not only Prince Charles and his place in the Great Reset, but how he's talked about how we need to treat climate change the same way we are treating COVID-19, and that we need a Marshall Plan, a basic military strategy to do so. That should send chills down people's spines. So, you know, I've shown World Economic Forum videos from 1998 where there's a panel. Bill Gates is the head of Microsoft. He's on that panel. Klaus Schwab is introducing them. You know, this is kind of the inception, their public coming out Davos party. And they're talking about the fourth industrial revolution. And then you can fast forward to 2016. We've played this on the program. And it's good old Joey B, Joe Biden, before, when he could speak, when he wasn't calling people one-horse ponies or dog-faced pony soldiers or whatever he babbles out at this point. And he's talking about the fourth industrial revolution. He's talking about automation. He's talking about self-driving cars. He's talking about then a middle class in the United States that already had been hollowed out. Now, there was some semblance of a comeback under Trump, love him or hate him. You know, people did do better economically here, but all of that has not only been retroactive in this country. Small businesses to the tune of almost 30% have been crushed here in this country, and it's only going to get worse. So when we talk about Klausy boy, you know, where does he come from in the first place, and why are they kind of making him the face of all this, do you think? He's the one with the book, you know, it literally says COVID-19 in huge letters, The Great Reset. You know, he's the one sitting down telling you this is about the fourth industrial revolution, a biological, a physical, and a digital identity merger, right? Transhumanism right in your face. You know, who is this guy, and why are they using him as the face?
Well, first of all, he's German. I mean, I shouldn't laugh, but I mean, you know, we've had a history with the Germans over the years. I think, you know, this is something which, for particularly elderly people who can remember the Second World War, doesn't sit right. You know, we have no differences really with ordinary Germans whatsoever. I mean, many of them have been incredibly fantastic, and they are some of the first people to point out. I mean, in fact, I was chatting to a German lady who lives here in Gloucestershire on a microphone with some Vox Pops. If people want to find it and search on my channel, you'll find this. What she says is, well, we remember the days before the fall of the Berlin Wall, and this seems like some new kind of dictatorship. a kind of medical dictatorship that they're bringing in, but it's a dictatorship all the same. And she was saying how when they used to go and visit their relatives in East Germany, you're getting the same kind of thing from the police here now. Where are you going? What are you doing? What do you have an excuse to go down there? What's your name? What's your address? Blah, blah. So you're being asked for all your personal private details for just walking down the street. And she said, I recognize this from my days. And she was very adamant that this is most definitely a form of medical dictatorship that's rolling up now. Anyway, so why Klaus Schwab? Well, he's the founder, or one of the founders anyway, of the World Economic Forum. The World Economic Forum have always had this kind of ambition to be the UN. You know, they were the business people's UN. Here in the UK, I don't know what the situation is over there, but we have chambers of commerce. We have, in this part of Britain, we have something called Business West, which is where all the big businesses meet up, and they have their own policies. They've got their own news, websites, this sort of thing. They basically see themselves following David Rockefeller's idea, which I remember picking up on in the 1990s. He did an article, I believe it was in Newsweek, talking about how it was Noam Chomsky that did the article, I think, not David Rockefeller, or maybe not Noam Chomsky pointed it out. But he was saying something needs to take the place of government and business seems best place to do it. That was in the 90s. That was Rockefeller's words, not Chomsky, no. That's basically where he's been. He's been on that page. He's been on that page all this time. He's saying, well, we're going to be a world government. And why not business, big business, do it? Because we are very wise. You know, we've seen this, that, and everything else. We can make sure the economy survives through all this. But there's another side to this, Jason. And that is, I think, that there is a potential threat from the climate. I mean, if you talk to anybody, for example, in sub-Saharan Africa, they'll tell you that there's been enormous changes in the weather. Now, whether this is geoengineering or whatever, you know, it's become much more difficult to predict, you know, crops than it has ever been. And I speak to people, certainly in Bristol, who have contacts with Africa all the time, personal, private friends. So there's something going on with the climate. I'm not saying it's all man-made, and I'm quite prepared to accept that it could be. A bit of it could be man-made, and that could be reversed if we just start using public transport, trains more than cars, these sorts of things. That, I mean, I'm absolutely not religious about this climate change business, but one thing's for sure, Klaus Schwab is absolutely religious about it, and this is a way that businesses around the world can, and this, at least this is what he's saying, this is the way that they can carry on making money. So let's just go along on a slightly different road here where it's not all about petrochemicals. And anyway, by the way, you know, we might get a war in the Middle East, which means that all the oil supplies dry up from Saudi Arabia. We might not be getting any oil. So we need to prepare for this, but we also need to be shifting our investments and resources into this kind of greenwash technology so that we can all be seen to be very green. So I think that's basically where he's coming from. He wants a new world order, which is a kind of green fascist order. And by the way, there's some extremely nasty Greens in the German Green Party over the years. They started off as quite a, you know, nicey-nicey friendly environmental groups campaigner. I was an ex-environmental campaigner myself, as I said. But to see the way they are basically using environmental agendas to basically control people's lives. And I think that's exactly where Schwab is coming from. That seems to be him. But, I mean, I've got a list here, Jason, as well, if you want in a minute, just of the individual Bilderbergers involved from WikiSpooks, which I've contributed a bit to myself. And I think, you know, it's been various people have got together and said, well, hang on, Bilderberg, COVID, this is all should be obvious, shouldn't it? Because there's a lot of people involved.
Yeah, let's hear it. Go down the list. I'm excited.
Okay, so number one has got to be Mr. Kissinger. I mean, I should leave him till last, really. But he's done a particular article. Just trying to find it here. Yeah, it's called he's been obviously at almost every meeting, Bilderbergs, deep politicians, numerous influential public pronouncements on COVID-19. Most importantly, he did an article right at the very beginning of this. I think it was in May, Wall Street Journal, I think it was, where he did this weird thing where he kind of, not long after we spoke, a kind of thing where he sort of either warned or threatened. And you've got to decide, what is Henry doing here? Is he warning us of something bad that might happen? Or is he threatening us that this bad thing might happen? So he's basically saying, if the world doesn't coordinate its response to COVID-19, then the world is going to catch fire, you know, will go up in flames. But this to me is a little bit of a, you know, this is Kissinger saying, you know, you better do as you're told, boys and girls. So obviously he's a major Bilderberger. But some of the minor types, we've got Jared Kushner. He's been charged with the fast-tracking COVID vaccine, Operation Warp Speed. He's a big Bilderberger, obviously. Tom Tugendhat is a British MP who many of these people were at the 2019 Bilderberg Conference, by the way. You can look that up in Switzerland at Montreux, just next to Mont Perelin, which is a mountain, which the post-World War II right-wing major post-World War II right-wing financial think tank was named after Mont Perelin, the Mont Perelin Society. So they had their conference right next to this mountain. You know, they always see themselves as sitting on top of these mountains like gods or something, Greek gods or whatever.
Like they went to the castle, right? Remember when Pompeo came in for the last one overseas and they got in a boat and he was going to give literally a speech on foreign policy in a castle? Yeah, they really do this type of stuff. They want to be in a mountaintop. They want to be at the top of a castle. They want to give you that pseudo FU, we are the gods, praise us. Continue. I'm sorry.
Well, they also see themselves as sort of aristocracy, you know, the top of the aristocracy, don't they? You know, almost like actually the Holy Roman Emperors, you know, of Europe. We had, you know, for hundreds and hundreds of years, the tyranny in Europe was basically the aristocracy run by the Holy Roman Empire. Even having wars with the Pope or anybody that disagreed with them, basically, would have the Holy Roman Empire on their back. So Tom Tugendhat, he's an MP, in November 2020, he said COVID vaccination could be mandated for British workers and travellers. Isn't that interesting? He just dropped that one, this Bilderberger, on the BBC. Matthew Pottinger, he was also at 2019 Bilderberg, a member of the White House Coronavirus Task Force. Then there's Sylvia Burwell. She was at the 2018 Bilderberg, co-chair of the Council on Foreign Relations, Independent Task Force on Improving Pandemic Preparedness. Now, what does it take to be independent, I wonder, Sylvia? You're independent of Bilderberg, are you? Okay. That's great. Really glad to have you on that task force. And I hope that anybody with half a brain is secretly recording everything you say in your house right now to find out what you're really up to, because there's nothing independent about you, darling. Vittorio Colao, C-O-L-A-O, she was also at 2018. She's the leader of a special task force to handle phase two of the Italian COVID task force. So a lot of these Bilderbergers have been just popped onto these national bodies, which are basically running policy. I mean, you've probably been following what's been happening here in the UK, in that we've got national policy being run by something called SAGE, which is an advisory committee. And basically Boris has turned his back on and given up, gone, okay, guys, you just get on with run the job.
He cancelled Christmas. Your take on that? I'd love to get it because, you know, I don't want to get into conspiracy theories or whatever, but he was really, in the very beginning of this, the face of a world leader that might not make it from COVID. You know, then he has this rapid recovery, and then his policies start sliding far and away from what he was elected for, to the point where now you guys are one of the most locked down places out there. 10 p.m. curfews, pubs closed, not everywhere there.
No, yeah. Well, we've got his tier system, and so there's parts of the country which are more open than others. And you know what the Brits are like. They're just basically either getting the train or getting the car for the evening into a lower tier so they can go and meet who they want and do what they want. There's actually, you know, in the higher tier areas like 3 and 4, you'll find they're pretty much dead. You know, there's not much going on in the towns at all. But in the other areas, there's much more. And obviously, it's the middle of winter here. So, you know, most people aren't going out much anyway. But there's definitely, I mean, we've got lots of protests. I mean, you know, terrific stuff. And that's another thing we could look at if you want, is the various protest movements, the Black Lives Matter movement. You know, we've got that in contrast to the various different anti-lockdown groups. It's been fascinating to see the way that's grown up. Extinction Rebellion here in Gloucestershire condemned the people protesting against the lockdown. Well, of course, the lockdown people like me would never condemn them. We would actually support their right to protest. But they are showing their colours, rather, by saying, oh, they shouldn't be allowed to do what we did. You know, typical, actually, of controlled movements, not of genuine protest movements. That's Extinction Rebellion I'm talking about there. We have a kind of, it's going up and down in terms of tiers, but Boris isn't really, let me just get into this, because it's a good question you asked there. What's happening is Boris has kind of left off of all this. He's just reading scripts given to him by the government advisors, which are mostly, you know, in the thrall of the pharmaceutical industry or one sort or another. And so what's happening is his own party and the right generally in the UK, conservatives and the more rebellious-minded left wing are all starting to hate the guy and totally distrust him. So his own party is starting to move against him in various different ways. So there's, you know, he's become the enemy that needs to be gotten out of the way. Now, I don't think Boris is going to be removed as PM, but he's going to be, you know, he's going to have his arm wrenched up behind his back by some of his own party saying, come on, Boris, you know, we've got to get this thing moving, especially when it comes to Brexit. We need to show that Britain can actually do stuff. And I would come back to what I said earlier about this being connected to Brexit. This is an absolute nightmare for the Bilderbergers and the rich and powerful. They've got to do something to make this a disaster. And of course, if there is a crash the beginning of next year or some sort of economic failure, Jason, everyone's going to be pointing the finger, oh, the Brits, look, Brexit. Well, actually, no, COVID is more likely. And actually, what about banksterism? Maybe that's got something to do with it.
Imagine that. Imagine, you know, again, that it's the cartels behind the scenes that are gutting the middle class, consolidating power, using those type of rules. You know, in New York, I mean, those are statewide. The lockdowns are serious. Now here, you know, this was me on Saturday night, Tony. This is why I moved to Iowa. I mean, there's no plexiglass, you know. No one's wearing a mask. There's no social distancing. It's just a normal Saturday night, and the media is not showing, you know, they want to say super spreader events, although there's no evidence of any of that when people get together. I was in D.C. a couple weeks ago amongst thousands of people. In Texas, they had a boxing match, the Canelo Alvarez fight, 12, 15,000 people. It's all really an illusion. So continue with the list, because I'm sure you haven't even cracked.
Okay, Yeah. I mean, this is psychological warfare operation. Psychological warfare. That's what they're doing to people. They're basically gaslighting the entire population, certainly here in the UK, most of the Western world. In other parts of the world, it's a little bit lighter. But they're trying to say that there's stuff going on, there's dangers that aren't there. And the real dangers, they're not talking about at all. That's all taboo, of course. So, look, okay, go through the list. Then we've got Demis Hassabis. He's a big-time Bilderberger. Every other year, pretty much, he's there. He is at a meeting of SAGE, our scientific policy-making committee, the people behind the latest cancellation of Christmas, for example, promoted the UK COVID lockdowns as well. Avril Haines, she was at Bilderberg in 2017, US deep state actor who participated in Event 201. So she was actually around the table for Event 201, holder of senior spooky positions with the US deep state connections. I'm not quite sure what they are, but all of these, by the way, are on Wikispooks. .com and their reference. So if you want to trace any of these particular individuals, that all these are referenced by the Wikispooks people. Brilliant site, by the way. I find myself, Google pushes them right down, you know, so then you know they must be good. So then they've also got Christopher Liddell from 2017 Bilderberg, White House Coronavirus Task Force. He's on that task force right now. Dido Harding in the UK. She's been placed in charge of producing the NHS app, mass surveillance tool called Test and Trace. She's actually the main person behind that. She's a 2016, the one I went to over in Dresden. She was there at Bilderberg. Shiraz Maher, 2015, a terror expert who had a case of COVID-19, which was classified as mild by British health authorities. She wrote a horrifying account He wrote a horrifying account of his experience with COVID-19, which was picked up by the commercially controlled media after it went viral on Twitter. So a massive exaggerator. That's Shiraz Maher. Thank you very much, Bilderberg 2015, for providing us with them. Exaggerating all this. Well, I mean, I actually know somebody who died, it looks like, of this back in January before it was really supposed to exist, this virus. And I don't really take very kindly to Bilderbergers who've had a very mild case making out that it's all about them. You know, this is really just ego attention seeking, the sort of thing we expect from, the organized criminals and people who are just in it for the fame. Rather than actual proper journalism. So then we've also got Mitchell Daniels. He was at 2012 Bilderberger 8 years ago, member of the Council on Foreign Relations Independent Task Force on improvising pandemic preparedness. So making sure that we're ready for pandemics was his job. He's sitting in there. Amazing. That's Mitchell Daniels. At the same meeting, Andrew Liveris, special advisor to the Australia's National COVID-19 Coordination Commission. He can't be Australian because they don't let Australians go to the Bilderberg meetings. Bilderberg is basically the political wing of NATO. So only the NATO countries go. I mean, sometimes they will have Chinese and Russians at the Bilderberg conference, but they're always like the Carnegie endowment people in those countries. So they're basically, you know, controlled by the US foundations, like the Gates Foundation, Carnegie Foundation in that case. And finally on the list, we're going to get there eventually. That's Kathleen Sebelius. She was there in 2007 and 8. She's on Joe Biden's White House Coronavirus Task Force. So they are all over your, particularly your US coronavirus response is Bilderberg, Bilderberg, Bilderberg. They're all over the place. But one person I will mention who's connected with this whole hideous mRNA vaccine technology. Well, and this is, you know, this is the big taboo in a way, Jason, is the way that this is not being spoken about at all. This is the first time that any medical preparation has ever been allowed that edits human genes, right? This is genetic engineering of humans, and it's just been ticked off. It's called Pfizer, Moderna, and it's the double shot vaccine, mRNA vaccine, that edits your genes. There are some people saying, oh, no, it doesn't do that. Yes, it does. It goes into your, you know, I interviewed Florida immunologist Dr. Stanley Liham about this. And he makes it absolutely, he's done a lifetime in immunology. And he makes it absolutely clear how it all works. The mRNA goes into your cell, your own body cell, and gets it to produce the antigen, right, to provoke an immune response. So no virus goes into your body. It's just your own body pretending to be a virus getting attacked by your own body. Now, does that sound like that might produce an autoimmune response like AIDS? And it might continue on in your body? So what if your cell does, if it's, say, for example, if it's in an organ, that these T cells can't actually get to the cell? It's just sitting there producing antigens, possibly for the rest of your life. This is a ridiculously risky thing. And I'm not saying that it should never be approved, although on principle, I don't agree with human genetic engineering. I don't think we really need to do it. Maybe a couple of pills of vitamin C, D, zinc and omega fish oil might actually do a much better job, or a popping a pill of chloroquine might actually do a much better job. So that's, I think, what we're looking at here is Emmanuelle Charpentier. That's her job. She was one of the Bilderbergers I met in 2016 in the art gallery in Dresden. And I said to her, I said, well, Emmanuelle, your CRISPR technology is fantastic. And she was quite pleased that I'd even recognized her, because these Bilderbergers love to mingle in the public knowing that nobody will recognize their faces. And then I said, well, yeah, but I'm not so sure about the designer babies. And that you could have heard a pin drop at that point. And she signaled to some guy who was just a few feet away from me, and he came immediately and walked between me and her. She turned on her heels and walked off. So he was one of her security detail. I didn't even know was there. So that's her. She has been involved in this CRISPR technology, which is also about human gene editing. Well, all sorts of gene editing. She's got massive amounts of money from hedge funds to do gene editing. And she was there at Bilderberg 2016. So I think, even though maybe she's not been involved in doing these mRNA vaccines, she should kind of be on the list too, really. And especially, I felt it was amazing to actually meet the woman. And she was smiling, and then suddenly, designer babies? No, she doesn't want to know. And off she goes.
Well, let's just talk for a second about the vitamins, the studies. You know, you have the vitamin C, you have the zinc. Here's a Boston Herald article about vitamin D. All this stuff has been mainstream. The steroids. You have, Dr. Corey at the Senate hearings talking about ivermectin. I've interviewed Dr. Bartlett about budesonide. You have the Israeli study that people with asthma, because they were taking inhaled steroids, 30% of them seem to be completely immune to the virus. And remember, these vaccines are not promoting that. You said chloroquine. I think that people have to understand and need to understand that, you know, when there was, you know, the president of the United States talking about that and saying, you know, hydroxychloroquine could work, it's something we're looking at. And the first thing they did is go, well, they published it in The Lancet, it doesn't work. What they never told, and that was the front page everywhere, and bleach in your lungs. What they didn't show you was they had to retract the entire thing on The Lancet paper because they wouldn't give up their actual data set, they wouldn't allow an audit, and they didn't give people the zinc on purpose. So I know it's not an authoritative treatment, but none of the things we just did say are authoritative. And what was authoritative?
Okay, so I think – yeah, look, the chloroquine is absolutely 100% authoritative. It's 2005 was the big study into it as a reaction to the original SARS-CoV-1. And it was then slated as the prime treatment for SARS. And the big smoking gun is a Pepe Escobar article. I think it was in March this year in the Asia Times, which details the French government requisitioning all supplies of chloroquine back in the middle of January, before this was even supposed to be in this part of the world. So the French government knew this was coming, and they made sure that the French population had no longer had any access to the main cure for it. So they are really, that's literally the, I think one of the big smoking guns of this is this use of the French government of chloroquine, taking it away from people. We could possibly have saved tens of thousands of French lives in order to turn this into a much worse pandemic than it ever needed to be. And they were scared, I think, that maybe that this was all going to be a storm in a teacup, and everyone was going to be given a load of pills and it was going to go away, because that was what they used to treat SARS in the old days. But also another thing about Charles, let me just get back to Prince Charles, he's a neighbour of mine here, by the way, in Gloucestershire, is the guy Tim Cohen I interviewed just before Christmas. I'm not sure if you've come across him, Jason. A lot of people, and I'm not 100% sold on his story, but he's definitely worth listening to. He's a former, I think it was Air Force cadet or Naval cadet, who decided whilst he was doing his training that the military wasn't for him. He'd found God. And he started chatting to some of the other people in the military about Prince Charles. And what happened was he got hold of a book of heraldry, which was to do with showed the Prince Charles's coat of arms. And he started looking at this, and he was looking at the Book of Revelation, saying, hang on, this fits with the Book of Revelation. So his book, The Antichrist and a Cup of Tea, it's called, is quite, I mean, he's a forensic guy, you know. And I absolutely cannot say he's talking about the Antichrist as Prince Charles. He's linked up in many ways things that are written in the Book of Revelation and Daniel, because he's originally a Jewish guy. He's a Messianic Jew. And he's linked up a lot of things in these two books that suggest that Charles fits the bill. Right. So the interesting thing is he could now be going for a world role. Maybe he's never going to be King Charles. Maybe he's always going to be Prince Charles and go for a kind of global thing somehow. But I think he's definitely worth looking at his Antichrist and a Cup of Tea, because even if, you know, Charles isn't necessarily, because people talked about Adolf Hitler, didn't they, at the time, at least. That's what I've heard from my grandparents. This is the Antichrist, this guy, you know. Well, they talked about him like that. But what Charles may be is a kind of Israeli Messiah. So if there's a war in the Middle East, which seems to be developing between Iran and Israel, then Charles may just come in as a savior and someone who could do a peace deal, peace brokering, that sort of thing. And he may fit the bill in that way. But anyway, I would just recommend that people have a look at Tim, and maybe you could even have a chat with him, Jason, because he puts a pretty strong case, even though he's a bit long-winded. He's even almost as long-winded as me.
Well, I'll just say this. You know, I don't get into, you know, the prophetic angles other than the fact that, you know, these people obviously do believe in some kind of, whether it's messianic or occultic forces, you know, to go all the way back into China. You know, this is yet another one of the Bohemian Grove annals, kind of not going in through because I'm on the green screen here. But you were talking about China and Bromley, for those that don't know, George Bromley. He's the guy that actually brought the cremation of care. This is their own annals. This is one of seven publications I have from there. But it tells the story about how he went to China and he came back with these rituals, and there were certain people that did not want to do them. But the cremation of care was brought in that way. And originally it wasn't the giant owl god. Originally it was really them out in the woods. And then they got the giant Buddha statue and they were doing the druidic thing. And then it got into the dull care ritual that we've seen in the famous Alex Jones video and now beyond. So it is kind of I just kind of wanted to point out that a lot of this is Eastern mysticism. A lot of this is based in either people believing in power, prophecy, whatever. So, you know, those that discount that, I think do themselves a disservice. But any way you look at it, when you talk about designer babies and you talk about new RNA vaccines that are telling our DNA to create antibodies that they wouldn't normally do, we are talking about transhumanism, 100%. And why don't you speak to that, that this transhumanist agenda is nothing new, and it is one that many of the people within Bilderberg have promoted for some time.
Well, they certainly are. This is their basic idea. I think, you know, you have to get inside their heads if you want, is that they, I don't think they believe in God in any way, but they certainly seem to think of themselves as gods. So they, when they see that things in the world are not as the way they wish, their attitude is, right, well, we are going to make it the way we want because we have all, so much. I mean, they're basically drunk on power, Jason. I think that's what they are. And they've got so much cash. The cash hasn't brought them the happiness. They always want more and more and more power. And that often means that they simply want to perfect human. I mean, they, one of the things, I mean, maybe it's like a used car salesman selling these ideas to these people, these transhumanist ideas. For example, one of them is that if you pay us enough, we can design a cell, a kind of change, you know, gene edit your cells so that your kids live forever. Now, this is down there in the transhumanist agenda. Basically, there's a really good book on all of this. It's by David Livingstone, a Canadian writer. I mean, I've a lot of time for, I mean, I've spoken to him a few times and interviewed him a few times, and I was on a what they call a eschatological discussion group with him just before Christmas, looking at the end of the world. Now, this is looking at it in prophecy, and none of us are saying it's happening now. We're not. I mean, my little title was called The Beginning of the End, looking at this whole idea that for the first time we've got these two things, television and nuclear weapons, that can make it much, much more easily for an elite, more easy for an elite to control vast, literally the whole world, possibly even. So nuclear weapons and television are an incredibly powerful way to control people, both, you know, through fear and persuasion. And so that was something I was on with David on, and he was saying was effectively that there's a lot of parallels between the Islamic idea of the what they call the Dajjal and the Christian and Jewish idea. Well, actually, no, it's probably not Jewish, is it? The Antichrist. But as part of that, I just think that David has, I think, done an incredible job on putting down the bullet points of what these transhumanists are really after. But the bigger picture is that these kinds of people have been around for centuries, and he traces them right the way back to the Canaanites, to Babylon, to Nimrod, Semiramis, and sees it as a kind of parallel history where you've got the Jewish, Judeo-Christian tradition going along one parallel track to this occultic tradition. Now, that occult has got its own aims, which are generally hidden, but it takes a lot of time and effort in going into the mainstream religions, including things like Hinduism, Buddhism, that sort of thing, and controlling them. So you've got this occult version of Judaism, which people can see as maybe the Kabbalah or Zionism or whatever. You've got an occult tradition in Islam, which is expressed itself through things like ISIS, al-Nusra, and the ideology behind that. and the Assassins, for example. And you've got a similar thing with Christianity. So you've got the Gnostics in Christianity, and you've got all sorts of traditions. But I suppose those are the most. And then, of course, nowadays that would be represented by the ideology behind Christian Zionism, putting absolutely everything behind the reconstruction of the temple in Jerusalem, and whoever tries to stop that is some kind of evil person. Well, let's have a look on the ground and see if they really are that evil. So I suppose that in a nutshell is summing up David's ideas, and he traces in that book back the transhumanists right back to the super fascists in Italy, who were very closely connected with all the ideology that drove Nazism and Italian fascism in the 1920s and 1930s. So he brings it all right the way round up to the present day, and then nails exactly what it is that they want to do, Elon Musk and people like that, with his little drilling a little hole in your head and putting a kind of, you know, whatever he's up to.
Yeah, no, the wall kiosk robot. It's great. Yeah, no, Elon Musk totally going to save the world. Don't worry about Neuralink. Starlink's great. It has nothing to do with DARPA or transhumanism. Rockets are going to Mars, only they're really not. They're not militarizing space or anything. Give me a break. Everybody loves Elon here. I think that we should do – go ahead.
Well, it's just – all I'm saying is that I don't actually think these guys have a chance of winning, Jason. I really don't. They're just not – they're not fluid enough. They're not convincing enough. They don't trust each other enough. And there is this sort of – opposing them is a whole load of people basically – going on common sense individually. They're not all control freaks by any stretch of the imagination. There's loads of people bubbling up all over the world who've got basically the same attitude, which is this is all a load of nonsense. And actually, we've got a much better plan for a much better world, which is a united front right across the planet against these people. In fact, in a way, what they're doing is they're uniting the whole world against them by this massively audacious step of COVID. And whereas there's many, many people that are still going along with it, wearing the masks, all this sort of thing. And of course, there is, to a certain extent, you know, we should be doing that in places where there are people who are genuinely at risk from COVID, but not in the high street. You know, there's also not down the gym, please, come on. And for younger people down at a rave, what's the problem? You know, there is no problem. So I think that there are people out there who are going along with this stuff, keeping a very close eye, watching the way it's going to go, Jason. And once the other side, that is the Gates crew, start to really ramp it up and start trying to force these people to take vaccines, etc., then I think we're going to start to move into a phase where ultimately what we'll see is they're failing. They're already failing with a lot of their PR. The propaganda I see on the BBC is more obvious than I've ever seen in my entire life. And a lot of the elderly people here in this country and, you know, maybe middle-aged people are also shrugging their shoulders. I mean, what about people who've been in the military, those sorts of people as well? They're looking at this and they know exactly what it is. The military never trust the media. They know it's nonsense most of the time. You know, as I knew once I'd worked inside it, you could see that there were these spooky characters behind the scenes. So there you go. I think we're going to win. I don't think there's any doubt about it, because I'm not just saying that from the prophetic point of view. The biblical point of view is good prevails. The human spirit cannot be crushed, and they actually are on a hiding to nothing.
Well, I'll tell you what, it's a good way to end it with upbeat. At Tony Gosling on Twitter. The website is thisweek.org.uk. Tell us where else we can find it, Tony.
Well, one other thing I will say, Jason, is I've got some – you can buy them if you want, but there's also free downloads of three books that I've written over the last 2 or 3 years, which actually I was commissioned, all of them, by publishers to write. But then for whatever reason, they couldn't publish them. They couldn't actually print them as physical books. So I just – during our Halloween lockdown, we called it, in November here, I published all three as PDFs. So if you want to get a nice copy without the with good quality photographs, you can pay for a copy for £10 or £15, or else if you don't, if you haven't got that and you don't want to donate or whatever, or you just want to have a look, you can get it free on the bilderberg.org website. Just download it for free there. But there's three books. One is called the first one, which was commissioned back about 8 years ago, is called The Traitors of Arnhem. And that's a lot of it is about the origins of the Bilderberg conferences and the people involved in this amazing. I mean, this is really tracing why the Bilderberg started where it did, at the Bilderberg Hotel, which is in a suburb of the city of Arnhem in Holland, where the biggest airborne operation of history at the time. I'm not sure if there's been bigger ones since, with two U.S. Paratroop divisions, the 82nd and the 101st, plus the British 1st Airborne Division, did what was a very audacious attack, which nearly won if it hadn't been sabotaged by British officers, senior British officers, sabotaged this and left 7,000 or 8,000 British soldiers to die at the hands of the Nazis or be imprisoned in Arnhem. I mean, it's encapsulated in the film A Bridge Too Far. But in a way, that was it took me a while to figure that out. But it was a book that was the conclusion of my research, really, into the Bilderberg conferences, where they started and how they began, and all the links with all the various Nazis, and of course Nazis in the UK. We had a Nazi king. King Edward VIII was a Nazi. He married a Nazi agent, Mrs. Simpson, and he was an enthusiastic. In fact, amazingly, Jason, the Blitz on London, the Nazi bombing in London, started because of Edward VIII. He was over in Lisbon and he said, well, if you want the British to listen, you're going to have to start bombing London. A week later, Goering's Luftwaffe started dropping bombs on London. So thank you very much, Edward VIII. He was the king who abdicated back in the 1930s, and King George VI was involved in quite a lot of the deals at the end of the Second World War, where the British and the Americans acquired lots of Nazi technology and lots of Nazi money and helped hide some of the senior Nazis, including Martin Bormann, who was Hitler's private secretary. So that's the traitors of Arnhem. The other two, a bit easier and quicker to explain, I'm sure you'll be glad to hear, are the Siege of Heaven, which is a compilation of my articles with a whole load of notes from when I was doing weekly articles for Russia Today on a column at RT, and also quite a lot of articles which weren't published on RT or which I submitted to RT, which they decided not to publish. And you can have a look for yourself if you think whether they should have done or not. But that's the Siege of Heaven, and that's also got a timeline of history, a historical timeline. As has the final book, which is a Siege of Heaven Reader, which is a whole load of extracts from the last, well, really since the end of the medieval period, since around about 1600-1700, which take you through, I suppose, the post-medieval world as I see it, which I think is a much more interesting version of history, the people who are really making a difference in history than today. And that's also got the historical timeline at the end of it. So three books, The Traitors of Arnhem, about the end game of World War II, a compilation of my articles from RT, which is on all sorts of different subjects, of course, including the Bilderbergers. And it was great. It was great doing that column, Jason, because every night when I used to do them at night time, it's about 7 or 8 hours it took to write one of these articles. I would think, right, what if this was my last chance to ever write an article? What would I write? So, you know, I was really not holding back at all and trying to make sure everything was in there and all fully referenced as well. And so then the reader is just these extracts from all sorts of, I think, interesting books over the last 400 or 500 years. So those you will all find at bilderberg.org, and links to even buy them if you're feeling so generous.
Awesome. Tony, it's been wonderful. We'll have to do it again. More. Let's not wait 6 months. Get at me. We'll do something after whatever happens in January 21st. We didn't even talk about the election. So much more to talk about. Really appreciate you coming on and highlighting Bilderberg, my friend.
Thanks, Jason. God bless. Cheers.
Thank you, sir. So everybody, that was Tony Gosling. I want to remind you, you don't get information like that and a little bit of sparring, right, back and forth. Like, I don't necessarily agree with everything Tony has to say. I certainly don't come at it from a religious angle. However, you know, it's great to have him on. He's very knowledgeable. And the way he listed down those Bilderberg members that are currently involved in all this COVID-1984 was incredible. $5, $10, $15, big donors. You mean the world to me. Without me, or without you, I would not be able to do this. Thumbs video up, subscribe, share, join the Burmese Brigade. If you are new, check out all the documentary films for free. Loose Change, Final Cut, Fabled Enemies, Invisible Empire, A New World Order to Find, and Shade the Motion Picture. Remember to rockfin. We go live 11 a.m. Monday through Friday, free and exclusive. Make your free account. Go check out the free exclusive video, not on YouTube today. Go check that out. There's a lot of free exclusives on there right now that are going to end up being premium. If you do want to support me over there and become a premium member, now's the time to do so. Ray is exploding. Again, it could hit the $2 range even today. Who knows? Or tonight. And that would be huge for this little cryptocurrency that really gives me a piece of this network that is encouraging free speech and not trying to enslave people through the technology of live streaming. Just saying. Guys, I love you. Thank you. And I'll see you on the flip side.